Chagim Uzmanim Litzason. Today's daf, Masechet Peitzah, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Vov. We're holding on the Halakha of Mishnah on the bottom of Chof Hei, Amud Beit. Now, what happens if you have a Bechor? Of course, a Bechor, which is a Tam, has nothing to do with it. You have to bring it to Beis HaMikdash. The question is, if you have a Bechor that fell into a bor, and this happens on Yontif. Now, it's at the bottom of a pit. It's going to be in bad shape. May die if we just leave it there in the pit over Shabbos. So he wants to take it out of the bor. Problem is, it would be mukza because of the fact that there's nothing you could do with it because of Bechor. Even if it has a mum, remember, you're not allowed to shecht a Bechor unless an expert on mumin can look at it and tell you that it's a mum kavua and that it's roi to be eaten outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Of course, it belongs to the Kohen, but it's no longer considered to be mukza. So now the question is, can you get it looked at, or can you bring it out of the bor in order to get the mumcha to look at it and memela get it out of the bor? So Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, Yered mumcha v'yir'eh. Let the mumcha, let the expert go down into the bor and let him see it. But you can't bring it out. If it has a mum and the mumcha finds that it's a mum, so then fine. Then you can bring it up. Now remember that Rabbi Yehuda holds of mukza throughout, and we've been talking about all of the chumras of mukza, Aliba Rabbi Yehuda. So that, for sure, it would stand be mukza. But what we're talking about must be is that the Bechor had a mum before. Because if it didn't have a mum before, so then according to Rabbi Yehuda, it has nothing to do with falling into the bor. If it didn't have a mum before, then there's no tzad that it wouldn't be mukza because he had his mind not to eat it during Yontif. So how could it possibly be kosher if you hold of mukza? So therefore, we're going to have to learn that the Mishnah does not mean what it seems to mean. The Mishnah must mean that it had a mum, but we didn't know that it was a mum that was roi for shchita. And then it fell into the bor with that mum on Yontif. So now the question is, are you allowed to draw it out of the bor in order to look at it, or does the mum have to go into the bor? So over here, the guy would have to go into the bor. If it turns out that the mum that was already there before Yontif is a mum that is roi de shchita, so then it's certainly not mukza because he knew about it and was waiting for it to be eaten on Yontif as soon as the guy would paskin. He saw that it had a mum. But if not, then he cannot shecht it. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, now Rabbi Shimon is good for the one who doesn't hold a mukza. And therefore, in this case, you would assume that he would say, what's the problem? And yet, what Rabbi Shimon says, no. Actually, if you had not already paskined the mum before, even if you want to call a mumcha, it's not going to help you. Ein zemen hamukhan is by definition not something that you can allow to be done on Yontif. Now, why you can't allow it to be done on Yontif is because, first of all, ein danim et hadin. We don't do dinim, and since over here, that's one approach. We're going to see later on more about that. And therefore, it's the equivalent of going into a court and bringing a suit, and that you're not allowed to do on Yontif. Or it could be because of tikkun. When the mumcha comes and he says, this is mutter, so at that point it becomes roi to eat. And because of that, it would be equivalent to a tikkun mana. Now, the truth is that obviously asking a mumcha something is not considered to be normally a din. I mean, if I've got a shayla on a chicken, you know, it's the most common, or used to be the most common thing in the world, where people would take their chicken from the butcher, and then they would find a shayla on the chicken that may look like a trefet to them. Maybe it had a broken bone in a particular place, or it had a place where the blood had obviously been there from before. So over here, apparently, we're going to be more machmir about the inyan of the Bechor than we are about stam, the getter of giving a psak halacha. So since it's being matir, the Bechor, bichlal, So because of that, it's more similar, perhaps, to the, it's a complete change from being a Bechor, into the whole animal is a Bechor, which is Aser, or to be a Bechor, which is the Momen HaKohen. There's a lot of discussion about how exactly to be Mechalik between normal Piskei Halachas, according to Rabbi Shimon, and between the Momen HaBechor. But let's first try to figure out what the basis is of the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Obviously, they can't be arguing about Muktzah, because if they're arguing about Muktzah, then the mission is flipped, because it's Dafka Rabbi Yehuda is the one who does hold the Muktzah throughout the whole Masechet, and Rabbi Shimon who doesn't. So that can't be the machlokas. So there's got to be a completely different issue that's involved over here. What could that be? So, but my come here for again. I mean, Rabbi Yehuda apparently holds that there's no problem of Re'iyas HaMum on Yontav, and Rabbi Shimon Sofer ain't really Mumim B'Yontav, when that has nothing to do with Muktzah. So according to Rabbi Shimon, there is a problem, I mean, I'm assuming that's what you're going to tell me, right? There's a problem, according to Rabbi Shimon, of seeing the Mum, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no limitations on paskening a Mum. But then, I mean, if that's the Machlokas, all they need to do is have a Machlokas about that. We should have had a mission that says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rayin es Hamumim B'yomtov, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Rayin es Hamumim B'yomtov. What is all this craziness about falling into a pit? And that was like, it's completely unnecessary issues. So what happened over here? Why'd we introduce things that appear to be irrelevant to that machlokas? Answers the Gemara, look, it's true. They could have had that machlokas, but that would not have given you some very important additional information that the Mishnah wanted to add. What was that? Because it wanted to tell you that even in the case where the Bechor fell into a bor. Now, over there, we have one more thing to take into consideration. And that is we have a matzav of Tzar Balei Chaim. And we've had cases before where because of the inyanim of Tzar Balei Chaim, Rabbi Yehoshua said that you're allowed to play games and do ha'aroma. So remember we had the case over there was where you had an Osov Espino fall into a bar. So you're not going to be able to shech both of them. And because obviously Osov Espino, lo tzir shkatu b'yom echad. So therefore, on the surface of it, there's no way to get them both out of the bar. So Rabbi Yehoshua says, because of the fact that it's Tzar Balei Chaim, what you should do is, you should pick one of them and say, I want to eat that one. Take it out of the bar. And then say, you know what? I think the other one looked a little bit juicier. So let me look at that other one. That way you get both of them out of the bar. So over there, I would say, since Rabbi Yehoshua said that you should do that in order to avoid Tzar Balei Chaim, which is a D'oraisa, so maybe I should do the same thing over here. In other words, what we should do is we should pretend, so to speak. It isn't really that we're going to use haroma because there is no pretense over here that's validated. But what are we going to do? Pretend that we know that it's a mum kavua. You can't pretend you know something you don't know. You can pretend you like something, but not that you know something. So we're just using the lashon of la'arim because of Rabbi Yehoshua. It's not that we're going to be doing any haroma. We're being makeup for inyonim of Tzar Balei Chaim. So you might have think we should do the same idea. La'arim v'laskeik Rabbi Yehoshua, who allows this in order to avoid Tzar Balei Chaim. Therefore, the Mishnah adds this additional point, that even though it involves Tzar Balei Chaim, Rabbi Yehuda says there is no way to take it out, which over there, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could do a bedikah of the mum, but you can't take it out unless you have the mumcha around. And therefore, there's nothing to do. Ihachi, but wait a second. So then if the main point of saying this story over here of the Bechor fell into a bor is to tell us that you're not allowed to play games, to be marim, and to bring it out because it's Tzar Balei Chaim, so then why don't you say that? I mean, why did the Mishnah say, lo yishchot? If you don't have the mumcha, you cannot shecht it. And that's not the point. Of course you cannot shecht it. We knew you can't shecht it. You said that that was a given in the Machlokas about whether it's possible to use a mumcha to take it out. And it's a given that Rabbi Yehuda holds of mukts and so on and so forth. So the main point was that lo yalev yishchot mi boili, right? I mean, what should have said? No, do not take it out of the pit. Because that's the main chiddush. Even though there's tzar balei chayim, don't first take it out of the pit. There's no way to take it out of the pit. So then it isn't really the right way to say the Mishnah, which would imply that that is not the big chiddush of the Mishnah. So then what is the Mishnah saying? Says the Gemara, this is very interesting, because you're right about that also, except that's coming to tell me yet another chiddush. Phrasing it that way, first it forces you to realize that there's the additional chiddush of the tzar balei chayim issue. Then when you look at the wording, you say, wait a minute, but there must be something else it's alluding to, because then why does it say lo yishkot? It should say lo yalav yishkot. Ah, that's coming to tell me yet another chiddush. Namely, what would be the din if you took it out? Shelo kedin. You went ahead and you took it out. You couldn't take it. Okay, so you take the animal out. And now the question is, so I would have said that if it turns out that indeed the guy shows up and he says that it's a no problem, so you might have thought, okay, fine, so now I can check it, right? Why not? I mean, there's no connection between the fact that I took it out, but Isser, Kamash Malan, you're not even allowed to shecht it. What do you mean? Shecht it? Wait a second. Did you get the mum paskadon or not? You didn't tell us that the guy showed up. I mean, isn't it a tom? What do you mean? I might think you could shecht it. How can you shecht the bechor? It's a chorus. You can't shecht the bechor outside of Beis HaMikdash. So how could you say that? A tamu? No, obviously. Obviously, we mean that what you did was you got the mumcha. And it had, in fact, nafa be'muma. It had, in fact, a mum kavua. Nafa be'muma? What do you mean? Just now, when it fell into the bar, was nafa be'muma? But then it was muksa. I thought Rabbi Yehuda holds a muksa. So obviously, well, I need to know that it's going to remain muksa and that you can't check it. Isn't it muksa? No, sorry. Look, it's a little bit more sophisticated than all this. What it means is that there was a mum that was a mum over me'erev yamta. The guy knew that there was a mum, right? So he's looking at it. He's waiting and hoping that this thing is going to turn into a more serious mum. It'll get infected, or some mum after a certain amount of time passes, there could seem to be mum kavua if they didn't go away. Whatever the case is. So he was basically waiting for the opportunity to eat this bechor. So therefore, there's no muksa problem. And now it turns out that it did develop into a mum kavua. Hashtavile mum kavua. So mao de temat de daite aluye. So you might have thought we do not consider that to be muksa, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, because he was hoping that he was going to find that it turns into a mum kavua. Kamash malan, therefore comes along the Mishnah to add an additional chiddush. That since at the beginning of Yontif, he was not able to shecht it, even though he was waiting, nonetheless, there's a third chiddush over here that in even such a case is considered to be a muksa aliba the Rebbe Yehuda. So that means that there's three separate issues in the Mishnah. So in other words, the Mishnah is telling me, first of all, it's talking about the case that we understood it must be talking about. Can you actually examine the Bechor? So it's talking about the first case is we had a Bechor that had a mum, and we needed to know whether it's the kind of mum, or even if we don't need to know, but you can't make that psak on your own. You have to have a mumcha to give you that psak. That was a takana that we made, and you can't just say, well, obviously, I mean, this is, no. This is because of takana, because kayanim used to mess up and so on. So we said, okay, we never let you shecht the bechor unless you have a mumcha. So therefore, we have the first issue. Rabbi Yehuda says that you can actually have a mumcha check it out and have the mumcha check it out for sure. And if it's in a pit and you don't have a mumcha to check it out, so then you cannot haul it out. Not in advance, you can't haul it out. And unless you already found out that it has a mum, you cannot haul it out just for the problem of tzar balei chayim. Now, the next case, which says, but if not, if you don't have that, so in other words, you do not have now a mum that was kavua from before, so then even if you actually did haul it out, then the halacha would be that you cannot shecht it on Yom Tov because of the fact that just, this is what I'm referring to, the new case where it was a mum that was of one state during Erev Yom Tov and then it developed into another state on Yom Tov. If it, you, just because of that, you cannot say that since I was hoping it would turn into a mum, Aliyah ben Rabbi Yehuda, there's no issue of muksa. So that means there's three completely different issues. Can you be Raya mum on Yom Tov? According to Rabbi Yehuda, yes. Is there a din of muktzah? According to Rabbi Yehuda, yes. Is there a din of muktzah even in the event that you were hoping you knew that this mum may develop further on Yom Tov? Even there, there's muktzah. Is there any way to be a mekel in order to take it out because it's Tsar Balei Chaim? No. So in order to cover all of those bases, the Mishnah used a strange case, and then it used a language that was not appropriate for the case. Getting maximum halachic density, information density, into the Mishnah, which is the godless of Torah Shebaal Peh, that la'olam yalamei derech hatzara, and force the mind of the learner to be the active component in the understanding. Tana Rabbanan. So now, talking about a bechor that was a tam, that falls into, at least this is the way Rashi understands it, talking about over here in the Braita, a bechor tam, that falls into a bar. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi Omer, this is not to be confused with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah is not Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi. If it's Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, so then it says Rabbi Omer. It says Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi Omer. So this other Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi says here in the Braita, a mumcha should go down and should check the Bechor. So obviously, he's saying you can't take it out of the bar. So that's included over here because of the you might have thought that because of the Tsar Balei Chaim. No, you can't do that. The mumcha, however, can be Raya Bechara. So you should go down. Im yesh bo bechor. So then he's allowed to bring it up and to shecht it right now. So obviously, this cannot be Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi, because it's saying I don't hold a mumcha. So this is basically Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi who is saying that it is not muktzah. Because apparently Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi doesn't hold that a bechor is muktzah. So Rashi says that bichlal, when it comes to the inyan of a bechor, since somebody has in mind always that in the event that something wonderful happens and it falls and it gets a mum, that then I should be able to eat it on Yom Tov. So it's never considered to be muktzah, even if it got the mum on Yom Tov itself. Okay, so this is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, which is a completely different issue. The imlav, if it doesn't have a mum, and now this too would mean, and you did shalokedin, and you brought it up, lo yishchot, you are not allowed to shecht it on that basis. Now, obviously, if it doesn't have a mum now, of course you can't shecht it. So the braisa must also be telling me that even if afterwards it got a mum kavua, you're still not allowed to shecht it. Now, what would the reason be here? In the Mishnah, we were able to say that the reason was Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, because it's considered to be muktzah, and that's good for the Chiddush, that it's considered to be muktzah, even though it had a mum from before. Over here, we're talking about it did not have a mum from before, and it fell into the bar. And it turns out that you took it out, and it ends up with the mum because of the fall, and you had it looked at, and you're still not allowed to eat it. So why in the world are you still not allowed to eat it? So apparently, you're still not allowed to eat it over here, not because of Rabbi Yehuda's reason, but because you were a bad boy, and you went ahead and you took it out. Shelo kedin. That would be the problem in this case. So it comes along the Mishnah to tell me, the Braisa over here to tell me that even Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who doesn't hold a muktzah, nonetheless, you're not allowed to eat it. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. I'm sorry. So where are we? Omar. So Afapiken lo yishchot, because of the fact that it's like a knas that you were over on the Isser. And since you were over on the Isser of Halo and Yontav, by taking it out, they gave you a knas. Okay, this is the way that Rashi learns. It's his first pshat, and it's the Mekubal pshat. Now, Omar lo Rabbi Shimon ben Menasi. So Rabbi Shimon, again, not to be confused with Rabbi Shimon, we were talking about Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Omar lo Rabbi Shimon bar Menasi. Hare Amru, Ein Ro'im Mumin B'Yom Tov. But didn't the Chachomim from the earlier Doras say that you're not allowed to be Ro'im and Mumim at all? And you're saying that we could call a Mumcha and we can have him go down? Let me explain to you. Ketzad, I mean, why do I say this, right? Because, look, it says like this, if no lad bo mum me erev yomta, ein mevakrim oto b'yomta. If, however, you did, so okay, so then you would be allowed to use it. No lad bo mum, how about if the mum itself came on yomta? So Rabbi Shimon says, ein ze min amuchan. It's not considered to be ro'i for use, which would mean that even if it turns out to have a mum kavua, and it was completely about a non-bal mum, was a tam before yontav, so then obviously he's saying you're not allowed to use it on yontav. And if that's the case, it's because it looks like your mamish being mitaken, because before it was completely, even though there's no iser of mutza, it's You did an iser of tikkun mana, because before it was totally aser. Now you created this new halacha, that this thing is considered to be food. Because of that, Rabbi Shimon says, if you did it, be iser, it's considered to be the same thing as building something be iser. And you're not allowed to use it. But Shavim, this is now, Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh is still explaining. Says Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh, however, I want you to know that Rabbi Shimon, who was arguing with Rabbi Yehuda about whether you're allowed to go ahead and look at the moment, that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon agree that even though we disagree about the actuality of whether it's mutter, that if the Bechor was born with a mum kavua at its birth and it was congenital, then it is considered to be a kosher Bechor to use on Yontev if the mumcha, we're going to see the mumcha is actually there, and it's considered to be a beheter because there was never a time that it was a problem that it needed a tikkun. Since it was born with the mum, so it doesn't look like the mumcha had been mitaken anything at all, and it was never usher. Dorash Rabba Baravuna, nolad hu umumo imo, mivakrimo torbiyamto v'chatchila. No, actually, if it was born with the mum, then you can even look at it lechatchila and nobody holds its osur. Omerle Reb Nachman, I don't understand how you could say that. I know that my father said, Abba said, some learned that this means that he's referring to Rabba. He's telling you, your father. Okay, the Parshas is referring to his own father. Abba tani im avaru bikro mivukar. That if he did the Avera of being Roya the Mum on Yontev, so in this case, it's all right, even according to Rabbi Shimon. And you tell me he's allowed to be Mevaker Lechatchila? How do you get that you're Mevaker Lechatchila? Omer Abaye, no, actually, Rabba Baravuna is right, that Rabbi Shimon in this case is Meide, that you can be Mevaker it even Lechatchila. Because take a look at the way that the Braita. Remember, Reb Shimon ben Manasseh said over this Braita. And the Braita had three separate sections. Let's reconstruct that Braita, okay? The first part said, Nolad bo mum mi erev yantav. In the case of a Bechor that had a mum before yantav, it says, Ein mevakrim oto b'yantav. You're not allowed to call an expert to do the Bikur. When you say Ein mevakrim, what that means is, Ein mevakrim lechatchila. That's always a lashon of lechatchila. So that means the opening is an iser lechatchila. If, however, it were done, fine. So then it's done and you would be allowed to eat it. Habidi yevet, chopper dummy. Now let's take a look at section B. Nolad bo mum b'yomtev. That's where Rabbi Shimon says, well, then eino min amuchan. Now, when you use the lashon of eino min amuchan, it means that it's aser even b'diavad. And you're not allowed, because that's what Eino Min HaMuchan means. It cannot be used at all. Mashma, even b'diavad. Now, what's the third chelik of the Braisa? C. Vishavin, and everyone agrees that in the event that it was actually born with the mum, that then it is considered to be Min HaMuchan. Well, why is this part listed separately? I'll tell you why. Because this part means even Lechatchila. So we have three sections. Part one is telling me, don't do it. It means b'diavad, it would be okay if you did the mumcha. Part B says, eino min hamuchan, which means even b'diavad. It's eino, don't do it, Gavi. That even, that it's eino min hamuchan. Eino min hamuchan means even b'diavad. It's eino min hamuchan. And part C is telling me, im no la mumo imo, you're allowed to. Eino min hamuchan means even lechatchila. And that's exactly what Rabbi Bar Avuna said. Not the way your father said. And that, in fact, Rabbi Shimon was maskim, that in this case, the idea is that you would be allowed to, even lechatchila. Wait a second, says the Gemara. There's another braita that actually shows that he's wrong, and that what Abai is claiming is the pshat here must be wrong, because when Rav Oshaya came from Eretz Yisrael, he brought along another braita, and this braita said, I don't care when the mum was neilad. Bein shenoilad bo mum me'erev yom tov. Ubein shenoilad bo mum bi yom tov. Chachamim omrim ein ze min hamuchan. So it's never considered to be min hamuchan, even if you looked at it. Now, the whole point of Abaya, how did Abaya show that actually Rabbi Bar Avuna was right, was from the fact that we had three separate sections, right? So since we had one section that Rabbi Shimon was saying that if you were over and you looked at it, that then if it had a mum from before Yontev, then Rabbi Shimon said that it was mutter bidi avad. Now, over here, we don't have that, because over here it's changed. Over here it says, ein zeh min hamuchan, and there is no lechatchila. Over here, there's no lechatchila bidi avad. There's just plain old, you can't use it. So clearly, there's another braita that's telling me that there's no basis for saying that there's a third section which is being matir even lechatchila. Well, I mean, what are we going to do with the other braita? The other braita does have two completely different sections about what you put into one section. There would be no way to understand it unless Rabbi Shimon, in fact, was made even lechatchila. Oh, that braita? Ah, bad news, that braita. Whose heksher does that braita have? Ach, that's got the Ada Bar Uchme from Ashdod heksher. That's no heksher. Everybody knows that's ridiculous. You can't rely on that. Ada Bar Uchme, he always says things are kosher. He's Meshabesh Vatani. So he'll say a braita, even though the braita is wrong. And he just goes around and he gives over these braitas. You got to know what heksher to take, man, if you're going to take a braisa, let me tell you. So, okay, the only one we should rely on, therefore, is Rav Oshaya. That, there we don't have the raya. And therefore, what Rav Nachman's Abba told him is probably correct. So, therefore, we should take the braisa of Rav Oshaya, which actually backs up the contention of Rav Nachman. And, in fact, we could see the Rav Oshaya is right, because Omar, Rav Nachman, Bar Yitzchak, if you look at the Mishnah, our Mishnah makes much better sense if you learn it the way the second Braisa, Rav Oshaya's Braisa. Because take a look at the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon Omer, and this is the same Rabbi Shimon, this is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kol she'ein mumo nikar me'erev yamtav ein zeh min hamuchan. When you use those words, you did not recognize the mum. What do you mean when you say ein mumo nikar? If you mean that ein mumo nikar klal, meaning there was no mum on it at all, erev yantim. So ilay mesha ein mumo nikar klal. So obviously, tzricha l'meimar, what Rabbi Shimon needed to tell me in this case, remember that Rabbi Shimon is talking about Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda is 100% going to answer something that is muktzah. So basically, even Rabbi Yehuda agrees to that. I can't be telling Rabbi Yehuda something that is, we're not arguing about. Of course, if it wasn't Mukhan before, it's not going to be usable according to Rabbi Yehuda. Then that can't be what I'm telling Rabbi Yehuda. What it means is, when it says it's in lo nikar, means lo nikar de lo ischazi lechacham mi erev yantav. That's what it means. In other words, it was not nikar, whether it was mum kavur or mum over, because I didn't have the chacham to paskin on it. And what does it say? That Rabbi Shimon says that even though there was a mum, and I didn't have the chacham from Erev Yontev, ein zeh min hamuchan. So ein zeh min hamuchan means even b'diavad, I'm not going to be able to use it, which is exactly what Rav Hoshaya's brisa said, and it's the opposite of that phony brisa that you were quoting to justify, to say that Rabbi Shimon was made that there would be a lechatchila case of Royin in the event that it was Neilad on Yantav with the moon. Now, the question is, this brings up a whole, it opens up a can of worms, as we're going to see in a moment, because what we're talking about over here was an interesting case where we mentioned that if a Bechor was born on Yantav, and it was born with a mum, a congenital mum. So then that leads to the following question. Something that becomes muktza in the middle of Shabbos, or in the middle of Yontif, and then it loses the problem that made it muktza. Is that called muktza? Because, I mean, I know that if something is muktza at the beginning of Shabbos, so then that's the whole idea. Once it's muktza, it's katsoy lepein hashmoshes, it's katsoy lekula yuma. So it wasn't roi for Shabbos. But what if something was roi for Shabbos, or was roi for Yontav? Something happened to put it out of commission in the middle of Yontav and Shabbos. And then whatever it was that put it out of commission now disappears, and now it's once again usable. Is there a concept of something, please mute yourself, is there a concept of muktza for a chatzi Shabbos, or muktza for a chatzi Yontav? And we're going to see why this is exactly the case that we just brought up. So the question was, outside of our Gemara, Rav Hillel, not to be confused with Hillel HaZaken, Hillel who was in the days of Rava, who was obviously an Amira, so Rav Hillel asked Rava, Yesh muktza lechatzi Shabbat, or ein muktza lechatzi Shabbat? What would be the halacha? Give me a case. So, Hechidomi, give me a case. Okay, I'll talk about the case of muktza. What is the case of muktza? The case of muktza is where you actually set things aside. You take some grapes, you put them up on the roof, or you take some dates, you put them up on the roof in order, that's called the muktza. That's the word for muktza. Anyway, we put them aside on the roof in order to dry in the sun. Now, as they start drying, they are not edible. It's like basically spoiled fruit until they completely dry. So what happens is, that there, you mamish set them aside to make them not usable. That's like the ultimate case of muktza. And now, suppose you did that. You put them up before Shabbos. So the question would be, technically speaking, what was the case? If it was roi ben hashmoshes, so then it wasn't iskatsoi lekula yuma, so then it's kosher. If it wasn't roi ben hashmoshes, so then oil v'iskatsoi leben hashmoshes, we know that it's katsoi lekula yuma. So mamanafshach, either it was or it wasn't. What would you mean by saying chatzi Shabbos? No, what do you mean? Things are not so simple. Let's imagine a case like this. Tricha, the irse v'adar irse. Suppose at the beginning of Shabbos, it was just at the point where it was edible. So now you could go up to the roof, and you can eat your raisins, you can eat your dates. Before you get a chance to go up the roof and eat your raisins, during the night it rains. Because it rained, the water was absorbed once again by the grapes, and now it turned ichy again. So now you're not going to eat it. However, the sun came out and dried it up, so now you have your delicious sun-dried raisins in the middle of Shabbos by 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Everything is ready. So here's an interesting case. It wasn't iskatsoi ben hashmoshes, because it was roi. However, it was unusable, and therefore was out of your das as soon as it rained. But then it dried up again. So this is what Hillel wants to know. It was irse during ben hashmoshes. Then it was hadar itche, when it started to rain. And then it was hadar irse, when the sin came out and dried it. So therefore, the question is like this. Would it be considered to be muktza l'chatzi Shabbos or not? So our first approach is that what Rava answered him was, it's muktza. Once it's muktza for some of the Shabbos, it's muktza l'kula yuma. This is what Rava said to Hillel in this first lush. Eisvei. So the Gemara has a kasha on Rav. It says, our case. Our case was that v'shavim she'im nolad, umumo imo, shezeh ben amuchan. You're telling me that everybody is meida, that if it was born with a congenital mum, so then it is considered to be muchan. Why? That should not be true. Because what we should look at, if according to Rava, yesh mutzi l'chatzi Shabbos, consider what the status is of this bechor. At the beginning of Yontif, this bechor had not been born. Was it edible? Absolutely. Because if you would have shechted the mother, then you would have been able to eat the bechor as a ben bechor. Didn't have a din of a bechor. Remember, bechor only gets a din of a bechor when it's born. So if it wasn't born, bedafka, it is roi to eat. And the person who was thinking about eating the mother would have eaten the bechor together with the mother. So therefore, in this case, why don't we say, according to Rava, Nema, hi bechor, mi kora havichos, agavime. Initially, at the beginning of Yontev, it was 100% min hamuchan, right? So if I had checked at the mother at that point, I could have been absolutely made a beautiful suda using the bechor. The moment it was born, this yalidle, at the moment that it was born, it was nitcha, because it's still, you're telling me it was born with a congenital mum. So, but you still can't use it until you get a mumcha to look at it, right? So at that time, until we get that to the mumcha, what's the din? Usser. I'm not allowed to shecht it. Comes along the mumcha, and he looks at it, and now he's matirah. And he says, oh, this is definitely a mumcha vua. Now you're telling me it's mutter. You said that to shove him. Everybody agrees that that's considered to be min hamuchan. But Rava just claimed that since it was muksa for an hour before the mumcha got there after its birth, or for 10 seconds, I don't care how long it is, but the point is that I needed to go call the mumcha. So then why does the Braisa say that it's mutter to shecht it if it was usher for that time? Omer Abayevi, Tamer of Safri, you know what? We're not talking about a case where you had to get a mumcha. We are talking about a case that the dayanim about the mumin were standing right there as the bechor was born with the mum. And as it is born, they're looking at it and they say, oh my God, this thing is mamish born with a mum. Look at this. It's missing that. And because of that, it was never a time in which it was mukzeh l'chatzi Shabbos. Others have the story in the inverse, that actually when Hillel asked Rava, what's the din of mukzeh l'chatzi Shabbos, that Rava told him the opposite. And Rava told him, no, there's no such thing as a mukzeh l'chatzi Shabbos. If it wasn't mukzeh ben hashmashot, so then as long as you're not able to move it, fine. But the moment it becomes roi for moving it, at that point, it's no longer mukzeh. In this version, the braita that we had brought as a kasha now becomes a raya, correct? So we said, let me bring a raya to Rava, because it says over here in the braita that everybody agrees that if it was born with a congenital mum, that it's considered to be roy, and it's min hamuchan. But why? Since this bechor miikara was roy to be eaten agavime, then the moment it was born, it was nitcha because I don't have a mumcha, and then the moment I show it to the mumcha, I schazia lechocha mishtereli, and then it becomes mutter. And there's a raya to Rava. Rava said that there's no such thing as mutzeh l'chatzi Shabbos. Yep, you're absolutely right. No mutzeh l'chatzi Shabbos. The bechor becomes mutter the moment that the mumcha is there. So apparently, we have a good raya. And in this version, Abaye, instead of coming to answer a question on Rava, actually is coming to tell me that what we thought was a raya to Rava is not a raya to Rava. Because maybe it's talking about, says Abaye, or maybe Rav Safra, that could be they were sitting there, and therefore there never was a case where it was actually usher on Shabbos. Maybe if it had been usher, maybe it would have remained usher. I don't know. But we can't bring a raya to Rava from here. Toshma. Or let's see if we can bring a raya from this braita. Somebody was eating grapes, and he had leftovers. So he decided, okay, I'm not going to throw this out. It's just going to turn, it's just going to rot. So he goes, he brings them up to the roof in order for them to turn into raisins. So he says, where he's eating figs, he had some left over, and he decides he's going to take them up in order to dry them out, to turn them into grog. So then he's not allowed to eat them unless he's mazmin miba'od yom. So before Shabbos, he has to say, I've decided that I want to eat it. Okay, why that that doesn't really make sense. Why do I need to decide I want to eat it? Okay, but meanwhile, the Braita says that if just because you already ate some of the fruit, that is basically not a reason to tell me that you're allowed to continue to eat the ones that you set aside for muktzah and you put up on the gog. It's not. And the same thing would be true about peaches or about chavushim, about quinces, or all other types of fruits that I can make dried fruit out of. So now let's take a look at what we're talking about. Echidami. If these fruits were already raisins by the time Shabbos begins, so let's say this happened on Sunday. The guy was eating his leftover grapes. He puts them up, and by Shabbos, they're already dry. Why does he need to say, I intend to eat from here? And if he didn't say, I intend to eat from here, what's wrong? They're perfectly good raisins. So why does it, what, every time you open up a box of raisins, you have to say before Shabbos, I do hereby dub thee raisins to eat? That's crazy. Why do I need hazmona? And if they're not roy to eat, what good is hazmona? You can't say, I am an idiot and I'm going to eat these nauseating half-dried grapes. That doesn't help. So the hazmona is not going to help you. So ki hazmin l'ma ha'ivim, what's going to do for you? So maybe you'll tell me that you don't know. Basically, you're downstairs. You don't have time to run up to the roof. And he's lo yada, ichos, lo chosu. So the bride is saying that since the guy didn't know, if he doesn't say the farish that I want to eat them, if they're right to eat them, then I want to eat them. So therefore, you're going to tell me that that would be the reason why it'd be us. Because he has to say, even if they were roy to eat, if he doesn't say that I'm thinking about them, so then it won't help. Because we could say that just because we happen to know, because the next door neighbor went up there before Shabbos and he saw that it was roy to eat for Shabbos, but that doesn't change the fact that the guy had been mikatsa them and they should be muktzah to him because he never indicated that he wants to eat them. But is that true? The Amar Rav Kana, didn't Rav Kana say that if you have muktzah, now remember muktzah, technical meaning of muktzah, is fruit that were set aside for drying. When we talk about muktzah sheyavshu, we mean that the grapes that you had set out on the roof, which are called muktzah, not halacha muktzah, that's what they're called. So muktzah sheyavash, if it dried out before Shabbos, and the owner does not know, and he did not look at them, and now when he looks at them on Shabbos, he can see that they're really dried. So they definitely didn't just get dry this second at 9 o'clock in the morning when I'm looking at them. They obviously were dry before Shabbos. So the halacha over there is that he's allowed to eat them even though he didn't know. Why? Because since when he put them there, his das was, I only want them up there until I'm able to eat them. So that Lamai said he was able to eat them. So you see that you do not need hazmana. So then that can't be the case either. So we can't figure out a case. If they were roy to eat, I don't need hazmana. If they weren't roy to eat, hazmana doesn't help. If the guy didn't know if they were roy to eat, you still didn't need hazmana if you find out in reality that they were roy. So now, the question is, must be, there's only one possibility that's left. Aha! And guess what that is? That is that since there's no other possible case, it's got to be talking about where they were ready to eat at the beginning of Shabbos. And then it rained. And then they got bloated. And then it dried. And okay, so then the Bryce is saying, if you want to be able to eat in that situation, where the guy sees, oh, gosh, it looks like it's going to rain. And if it rains, I'm not going to be able to have my raisins tomorrow. So there he says, look, even if it rains, my das is to eat these raisins as soon as they get dry. Okay? So it's coming to tell me a chiddush in that case, which is, of course, the very case of muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos that Rava was being asked about, right? So it's saying over there that you need to have a hazmana for the muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos. And if you're going to tell me, Iyamet ein muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos, why do I need the hazmana? So now even the fourth case doesn't make sense, right? We found four possibilities. The last possibility, we can't come up with anything else, of why the heck you would use hazmana or need hazmana was to deal with this specific case of muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos. If there's no such thing as muktzah l'chatzi Shabbos, as one of the versions of Rabbah has it, so then this whole Braita makes no sense. You see from the Braita, that you do need to have a specific hasmona in the event that there's a muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos. LMI, says the Gemara. Excuse me. What you're saying doesn't make any sense. You're trying to prove that yesh muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos, right? Okay, so if it's muktzeh, it's muktzeh. How come you're saying, I do hereby declare my intention? You can't hereby declare your intention. If something is muktzeh, your intention doesn't help. And if it's not muktzeh, we don't need your intention. So either you hold it's muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos, or you don't hold it's muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos. What the heck are you talking about? That makes no sense. So LMI, yesh muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos. So what good is it to be mazmin? So ki yazmin l'umay havi. Either they are muktzeh or not muktzeh. So therefore, there's got to be a different situation over here. And you didn't take into consideration there are five possibilities. And this fifth possibility is actually much more likely when you think about it. Because, look, when you're mekatsa things, you put them up on the roof to dry. You have not defined whether you're talking about Del Monte raisins or sun-made raisins. Now, as you know, the sun-made raisins are very dry. The Del Monte raisins are very squishy. Okay, what kind of raisins do you like? You didn't say. So now the question is, when you're mekatse, then you have to define in a case where they're right on the edge. So, lo tzricha de'ichazu v'lo ichazu. In other words, they are right on the edge. Some people like their raisins plumpy and sort of squishy. So those other people look at that and say, ugh, these are half-baked raisins. And therefore, to me, they ain't raisins at all. I wouldn't eat this stuff. So therefore, it's saying, some people like these raisins, some people don't. Therefore, it's talking about exactly that case. If the guy was Osman and he said, listen, I want it to be clear, I like squishy raisins. Okay, so then fine. If they were at the squishy stage, then that would mean that they're considered to be minamuchat. But if lo azmin, he was not megale azdas, and therefore it's considered to be muktzeh, since we assume that he's like most people. Omer Rebbe Zera, okay, look, I don't understand this business of yesh muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos. How could there be muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos? Let me ask you something. Did anybody ever make pea soup on Yontev? Did anybody ever make lentil soup on Yontev? Now think about that. You've got yourself a bunch of lentils. If you want to eat the lentil and chew on a lentil, can you chew on the lentil? Absolutely. But if you start making soup and you eat a half-cooked pea or lentil, Richie, why don't you tell them what happens to someone who eats a half-cooked pea or lentil soup? Since you were the observer of the horror.
They end up in the hospital.
On Shabbos. On Shabbos. Exactly. So, oh gosh. So speaking about muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos, ruining your whole Shabbos. Although, I don't know, you finished that entire book on the Second World War. I'm not sure if it totally ruined the Shabbos. Anyway, but the idea is that it definitely goes into a state in which it was first chewable, but then once you start cooking it, it's deadly poisonous, and you don't dare eat it. And then when you finish cooking the soup, it tastes very good, and then you eat it for your Yontav Suda. Now, how in the world do you explain that if you're going to tell me yesh muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos or yesh muktzeh l'chatzi Yontav? So anytime you do that, I'll bring you Raya from Polim and Adashim. Polim and Adashim, before you started cooking them in a soup, they were certainly chewable, right? So the moment you throw them into the pot and they start cooking, they are now completely useless. So you're being matcha them. In the same way, then you put your grapes up on the roof. You're doing the same thing to your lentils when you put them into your soup. Gomar bishulayu. Now when you finish boiling them, now they're again edible. So apparently, there is a deal of normally, it's not muktzeh l'chatzi Shabbos. It's just the way you cook things. Normally, abaye. Oh, come off it, man. What? You're saying that when you cook something, it becomes muktzeh. So what are you bringing me? Lentils, pea soup. That's not the problem. You should talk to me about cholent. Cholent. A guy puts in the meat in the cholent, okay? Now, if he's got normal kederes, stam kederes bi'alma, what we said was back in Masechet Shabbos, you got things that are cooking, bein hashmashot, they're boiling hot, and they're not roy to eat at that point, okay? Now, by the time they come, if it's something for the morning, or by the time for the evening, we can eat it for the Suda. If it's something like a cholent, we eat it in the morning. Why don't we say that during the time it was cooking, that they are considered to be usur? I'll tell you why. Because the whole idea of muktzah, for heaven's sakes, is only talking about things that are not things that you are processing. You've basically thrown them out to nature, and you're allowing nature to process it. But where you're doing the processing, so you're doing the cooking. You're doing the soup making. Obviously, that's not called muktzah. What the heck is wrong with you? Whatever you do, that's part of a process which is in your hands. So that's never considered to be muktzah because I've set it aside. Setting aside is for things that are out of your hands. That's the point of muktzah. This is not outside of your hands. This remarkably leads to a brilliant question which Rav Moshe deals with. Are clothes that were left in the dryer at the beginning of Shabbat, and they're not roy because they're soaking wet, since it's considered to be you or mafil, the dryer, is that considered to be a process similar to cooking, in which case it would not be considered to be uksa, because it's biyotcha. Again, Moshe Pashkins, it's okay, actually. Anyway, but as you can see, it's amazing where you have, like, contemporary issues popping up in the middle of a sugya. You think, oh, my God, like, what does this have to do with anything?